Welcome to the Santam Ensure Your Future Money Bootcamp with me, Mapalo Maku.
And me, Maya Fisher-French.
To give our listeners a bit of background, we have been working with Santam staff members where we take them through a money bootcamp.
And last year, after seeing the incredible changes that these individuals went through, we realized that there was an opportunity to take this money journey to a broader audience. So thank you very much to Santam for sponsoring this podcast.
I was aware of kind of the transfer of the names, like the transfer duty of the bond initiation, and I knew there were lawyers. What I didn't realize, I thought all of that would be paid by the bond, or like the bank would just kind of cover all of it, and I wouldn't have to put out any monies up front except for the deposit. So that's kind of how I planned it in my head. So as I'm going through the journey and, you know, I find my place and I start talking to all the parties involved. So I'm just in my head, I'm just like, oh, okay, that goes my couch money. So instead of buying a couch, I'm going to have to pay kind of the lawyers up front.
In our last episode, we spoke about how to put together a budget. But what if you're about to face a major purchase, like a house or a car, that requires another whole level of budgeting and financial decision-making? And Mapalo, as you gathered, the voice clip you heard earlier was from Tiamo, one of our mentees from last year. And what she discovered when it came to buying a property was these massive costs that you don't realize, and they come as a really, really big shock. So let's kick off with buying a home and the kind of things we need to budget for.
Oh, Maya, it's such a big ticket item. And most of the time what I've realized, it's based on emotion rather than based on I've done the numbers and, you know, I've gone through the numbers over and over and over again. People get into the property and they're like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is the one. And completely all the numbers just fly out the window. So for me, that's been my experience. And I've even heard from friends who've said, you know what, I did it and it was such an emotional purchase. And now, yes, I have a little bit of remorse.
Well, I have to tell you, every single house, and I bought three houses, I've spent more than I planned. And a very good friend of mine who is a financial planner and who always tells her clients, you can't afford that house.
Yes.
Has gone and spent more than she planned on
the
house.
Oh, my word.
And she said it is ultimately an emotional decision. So I said to her, what you should really do is you should tell your clients what they can afford, like 20% less than what they can really afford, so that you're resetting their baseline, because everyone's going to push themselves. And I remember at one point buying a home, we stupidly bought the second home. And in fact, the first home we bought, the interest rates went from 17% to 24%, or 23%. People are worrying about interest rates now.
No.
I'm talking about the late 90s. We had a huge blowout of interest rates. And I remember just not like being absolutely desperate. And then the second property we bought, I remember at 2 o'clock in the morning walking around the property trying to work out if we could subdivide it.
2 o'clock in the morning.
I had such anxiety. And the reality is that, and in fact, this was exactly what I said to Yama. I said, your first 2 years are going to be really, really tough. But fortunately for her, she has bought at the top of the interest rate cycle, right? She only bought now. So the top of the interest rate cycle, it's not like she's going to – her rates, if anything, will go down, but her salary is going to go up. So over time, you're able to absorb it. But yes, the first 2 years of home ownership, it's
quite
really, really tough.
Challenging.
And you generally have to cut back quite a lot to survive.
No, absolutely, Maya. My journey into home ownership with my husband is a little bit different, because remember in the last episode around budgeting that we lost our home when I was young, and I told myself I will never, ever not have a roof over my head. So when we bought our property, we did pre-approval beforehand and I said we are going to go less than this. And even when we got the property, I negotiated to get the property at like 100, we knocked 150,000 off of it. So for me, it was one thing that saying, you know what, we need to be able to afford this by all means necessary.
I think Mapalo should be the one going with people.
You should go to Mapalo,
don't come to me.
It actually reminds me of Babalo. She was one of the mentees last year and she has an experience about the interest rates rising. Take a listen.
But now when the interest rates hiked up, right, it was a shocker to me to say, even within the that room that I'd built for myself, right, I still had to add on right? That is exactly what, like, that's when I got the awakening to say, okay, that wasn't enough, right? And now it starts being a conversation of, okay, now I must sit down and see what else can I cut off, right? You go on to the simplest, you know, friends, right? Going out. That's an easy one I can chop off. And you realize, okay, but that also has an impact on you. Your relationship suffer, right? And then you work around, okay, maybe if there's a friend's birthday, I can't really be there, but maybe I can send a gift, right? And that works for some time, and then there's the next interest hike. And now it's like, okay, I can't even send a gift, right? So that social impact was definitely there.
So Maya, as you can see, for her experience was that the interest rate cycle, everyone was going in, I need to buy a house, everything is cheaper now. That's what people were saying in the market, that I need to get into the property market right now. The interest rates are low, but they did not foresee that that was not sustainable.
And I think that is, so one of the key things when you're buying a property actually is that you need to build in a buffer for interest rate hikes. Now, maybe it's a little less relevant now because we are at a top of an interest rate cycle. But if you can pay in 10% more, 10% extra. So if your mortgage is 10,000 Rand, pay in 11,000, because it has two effects. If you pay 10% in more, you will pay your property off 5 years earlier.
Oof.
Yeah, which is a nice saving. But if interest rates go up, you can absorb them because the rates will go up and you'll still be paying 11,000 Rand a month. You won't have to suddenly find that extra money in a budget. So really, we have spoken about overspending on property, but where possible, you know, you really want to increase or have a repayment where you're able to pay in that extra 10%. Really important. But the other one that I found really hurts people when it comes to property, and I find this both when people are buying property to live in, but a lot with investment properties, and that are levies and rates. So remember we heard from Tsiama earlier. What happened was she bought into sectional title, which has levies.
Yes.
And she, you know, thought she knew what the levies were. And then during the transfer period, so she wasn't an owner yet, they held the AGM for her sectional title. You know, there's a body corporate.
Yes.
And the body corporate gets to set the levies. And by the way, the body corporate are the owners of the property. Mm. So you have a right to go to the AGM and participate. But she said nobody pitched at the AGM. And that's the other problem. People don't participate.
Don't pitch. Yes.
And then the few people who are there get to decide. And they put the levies up by over 10%. So suddenly she arrives thinking she has a budget, and her levies are actually over 10% higher. Then she had to have rates, which were separate, and that's the value that you pay the municipality, water, electricity. And I think a lot of people don't think about that.
Yes, Maya. And you know what? It's all of these small costs that actually end up being quite a lot and making people feel like, you know what? Oh, I regret this decision to buy this house. And a lot of the times people get shocked, Maya, at the fact that, okay, now even the maintenance is on me. They did not know now that you have to pay the municipality. I've seen people who say, what is this bill for? Why is it coming to me?
Tsiama had exactly that. She didn't realize. She thought that the rates were part of her levies.
Yes.
And she only picked up six months later that she owes the city of Johannesburg a whole lot of money. You know, there are a lot of people who are not paying their rates, and it's not a good idea because ultimately that is building up, and it's building up interest, and you actually owe that money.
Yes. And also, if you were ever to sell a property, you have to pay those rates off before anything else. Mm.
Really important. So you were saying to me, Mapelo, before we started this podcast, that, you know, because I said to Tsiam, did you check the rates and all of that and levies before you bought the property? And she said, well, they were listed on the property, you know, we were property 24. But you're saying those are not always accurate.
For me, I found that that's not the true reflection of what you will be paying, right? So, for example, with us, when you bought the property, they were saying that rates were about 1,000 Rand. But for me, I always want to see things in paper. So we asked that the people who are selling the property, can we please have 3 months worth of your statement so we can kind of gauge for us to budget more properly, more thoroughly. And when we received the statements, they were almost three times more than what is listed on those types of websites. So, and I've asked the same question to my friends and said, you know what? What are your rates? What are your levies? And they say it's completely different from what was listed.
Big tip, if you're buying a property, ask for the actual bills.
Yeah.
Look at those bills. Don't just take the estate agent's word on it.
No,
very
absolutely.
Important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's not malice on their part, but it's like, okay, you know what? It's kind of around that much. And also, you know, you don't want to make things seem so expensive. You're trying to sell a property.
You don't want to admit to people it's going to cost you 5,000 Rand a month in running costs. And the other one is, of course, when you go and you get your mortgage, we spoke about those costs up front, right? There's transfer fees, there's transfer duty. So one of the things, I get a lot of complaints from people. They say, I got two lawyer bills.
Oh, yeah.
They don't realize that there's a lawyer, a conveyancing lawyer, that transfers the property into your name. And then there's a lawyer that works for the bank to create the bond registration, right?
The bond.
And they're often quite similar amounts. So people think they're paying twice, but they're actually a whole two set of lawyers.
I know a lady who bought two properties at the same time because, you know, it was her big dream that she's going to start investing in property. Now she was sitting with four. Because remember, it's two properties. Like you're saying, you're going to pay two lawyers, conveyancer and the one who registers the bond. Now she was sitting with four of those. And she said, I thought I was prepared. Then she realized that actually I wasn't prepared. And that's where a lot of people really, really struggle at that point where they realize that, oh my goodness, there's more than just one lawyer. And what ends up happening, people take out either a personal loan or max out their credit card or something along those lines.
Well, fortunately, Tsiyama is one of our savers. She likes to save. So she wasn't able to decorate her house or buy the couch.
Oh, like we didn't.
Exactly. But for most people, they exactly that. In fact, I've come across quite a lot of people with credit card debt who it's exactly for those fees. That's what they just put it on. They had to put it on their credit card.
Yes.
And it's not actually difficult. If you go onto your bank, I use the tool. I'll use Uber. They're one of the bond originators. They've got great calculators.
Yes, and OOBA.
OOBA, yeah.
Because it sounds like
Uber. No, not Uber, not the driving one, the other one. Or even I go onto the banks. I think I often use Nedbank. I don't know why. It's just easy. It's a nice little calculator. And you put in there transfer fees and bond fees, and it calculates it all for you. So it really gives you an idea. And then if the property purchase is more than 1.1 million, you've also got transfer duty, which is a tax. So the guys, this gets really expensive very quickly. So you have to have built up that up front. And I think I want to talk a little bit about how one builds up the war chest for the deposit, because you're putting down a deposit, you've got to put down all of this. And how does one prepare to be a homeowner before you're a homeowner so that you've got all this money ready to pay for all of this?
Phew, Maya, you know what? It takes patience. For me, what I've realized, it takes patience. So what happens, and I did an interview with someone recently who says, you know, the idea of home ownership between her and a partner, they just started talking about it one morning. Like, you know, it would be nice. You know, we're expecting. And she says they lived in a comfortable two-bedroom apartment. Comfortable. Then from the idea, it became, we are very excited now. They're looking at homes. Like every minute of their talk, it's about house and house hunting. And now they're seeing properties. Within the time that they started talking about buying a property and owning a property was an equal of 4 months, Maya.
And were they ready for it?
No.
And it's where the emotion, we spoke a little bit earlier about how the emotion overtakes you. You see the property, you fall in love with it. And the money isn't ready.
Absolutely. Mm. And I mean, she says they had to borrow money from her mom. And it was just a dream. And one of the things, you know what she said? She said, you know, the partner just went along with me. At one point, he did ask, don't you think we should wait? But because he wanted to make sure that she's happy, they sort of just went along with it and says, you know what? Now I do regret it. Now we are sort of in the hang of things, but that's almost 2 years later.
I think this is an important point. And one of the things that I know when people contact me and say, how do I get, often the first thing, of course, is looking at your credit record. You've got to get your credit record as brilliant as possible. At least, you know, each of the credits unions use different, credit bureaus use different scores, but at like 650, 700, yeah, it should be saying excellent. Yeah. If it says excellent, you will get a good interest rate. But the other thing I always say to people is start to live like a homeowner before you buy, yes, the home. So you have a, maybe at the moment your rent is 10,000, electricity or water, but if you now had to become a homeowner, what would that mortgage be? Your levies, all of that, and whatever that difference is, maybe you're saving, maybe it's going to cost you an extra 5,000 rand a month. Start putting that 5,000 rand away every month, then you will know if you can afford the house, yes, right?
And because, don't dip into that 5,000.
Oh, no, no, the 5,000 is what, yes, you're building up for the deposit and all the costs. Yes. But at the same time, it's training you as a person to make sure that you can afford that property once you move into it. So I think that is, and of course, you know, you arrive at the bank, you say, well, for the last 6 months or year or whatever, I've been living on less money, yes, preparing for home ownership, and I've built up a deposit, you're probably going to get a better interest rate.
No, absolutely, Maya. Mm. And I always say, you know, how do you go to a bank, ask for something when you don't know your negotiating power? Mm. And your credit score is your negotiating power to say, my credit score is fantastic, I deserve a lower interest rate. And for you even to be able to say to your bank, I'll go shop around, which is something that people don't do, Maya, is it?
I have to tell you, shopping around, you know, I always get these press releases from the bond originators saying, you know, we on average get a X percent better deal for clients than if they go to their own bank. And it's a press release, right? So I think, oh, obviously they're going to say that. But I was speaking to a conveyancing lawyer who said it is true. She's both an estate agent and a conveyancing lawyer. She's got two businesses. And she said the bond originators generally tend to get a better interest rate by shopping around. So oh, wow, actually it is true. It's not just the press, yes, releases. So it may be worthwhile. I mean, I always think if I go to my bank, they'll see that I'm a really good client, and all the rest of it, and they'll give me the best deal. But banks also have different risk processing. They may have different areas that they prefer. They may be overexposed, yes, to one area than, yes, another. There's different things that motivate risk for a bank. So it is worth shopping around.
It is 100% worth shopping around. I'll tell you a personal story. When Ofenza bought his flat before we got married, you know, once we started getting very close and saying, okay, we do want to get married, we're talking about finances, I said, let me see what interest rate they're charging you here. And he says, no, I just went with Bank X because I've always banked with him. I said, so you didn't shop around at all? He said, no, that's the interest. And it was so high, Maya, for a property. I said, no. You have to go back to them and tell them that you are the client or you'll move over, you know, something along those lines. And he was shocked that actually it's something that you can do when buying property, that you need to be shopping around and not. And his credit score was brilliant.
Mm, absolutely. Don't ever go with the first offer. We've talked a little bit about, we've talked about buying property. So it's absolutely, understand all the upfront costs,
yes,
because they are huge. We're talking like,
they're massive.
Maybe even up to 100,000, depending on what the value of your property is. You want to make sure you've done your homework on the rates and levies, electricity, water, get the statements from the existing homeowner.
Yep.
That's really important. Insurance, you will pay building insurance. You'll probably have to have life insurance on the mortgage. Find out what that's going to cost you. And then, you know, start living like a homeowner and build up a deposit. So I think those are some of the, and shop around.
And shop around. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I think those are some good tips for preparing for the buying of a home. But the other thing most people do before they buy a home is buy a car. Drives me mad.
Yes.
I don't mind people buying a car. I mind the amount that people spend buying a car. And I think we must cover that in a little bit more detail when we talk about credit and healthy
credit. Yes,
but maybe let's kick off with just some of the things to think about when you're about to buy a car.
Is it a mode of transport? Right? For me, that's the first thing, especially if you're just starting out in your career. I always say the best car is the car that you can afford. All right. Not the flashiest, not the, because also you are really at the start of your financial life. So you want to take it easy. You want to make sure that it's something that you can afford, that it's something within your means, so that if there's other things that change, because you know what, Maya, what I've realized, especially with younger people who start working, they don't realize some people are going to get married in 3 years' time. Some are going to start having kids. And we never think about our future affordability when it comes to such things, right? So for me, it has been such a key thing when I talk to graduates to say, what are the things that you want? And how will this decision that you're making today on purchasing a car impact your finances in the next 5 years?
Well, so, most people buy a car over 6 years.
Yeah.
So you're committing to that amount of money for 6 years.
Maya, have you seen there's installments up to 7 years now?
I know. It's,
and 8 years.
Yeah, we're definitely covering this in detail in credit because there is healthy credit and there is unhealthy credit. And buying a car over 6, 7, 8 years is unhealthy credit. Let me just tell you that. But also one of the things you said is, you know, buy a car you can afford. But what is afford? Because people forget about, again, insurance and fuel, you know.
Maintenance.
So afford is not the monthly installment.
Yeah. And often people just focus on that. Okay, what is it that I can afford? And I put this in quotes, meaning I know that I want a car that costs 5,000 rand a month, but it's probably going to cost more than 5,000 rand. Mm. So that 5,000 rand must include the insurance, it must include maintenance, it must include pouring fuel, it must include car washes also, if you're not going to do it by yourself, all of that.
Mm.
And I think it's very important from the get-go to say, what actually is that affordability looking like? And I think you can apply the same thing, right, Maya, with property, where you live like you own this thing now. If you are going to spend 5,000, then you put it away into some other savings account. And if you dip into it, because remember, with your bank or anyone who's financed your car, you can't say, oh, well, I'm running short this month, so I might need to dip in by 500 bucks. No.
You're not going to let you do that. It's called default. That's what it's called. No, absolutely. And then, of course, if you can maybe wait 6 months and you do that, you've got a really nice deposit to put down on the car, and that means your installments come in lower.
Yes.
Or you can just shorten the time period that you're paying your car off, and over time. And that's, again, something we really need to cover in the credit is the total cost of credit. Understand the impacts of all of these choices, you know, and decisions. But Mapelo, you know, when we talk about affordable, one of the things is that people, I think, do need to look at buying secondhand. You know, you can sometimes, you buy a car devalues by 25% as you drive it out the showroom.
Yeah.
One of the reasons is VAT. There's 15% VAT on it. And then there's just general, what it's been driven out, owned by someone else. And there is such an opportunity to buy a car. I have never bought a new car. I think I should tell you that. One of my huge tricks is I buy a luxury car that's 4 years old, and then I keep it till it's 12 years old.
Oh, yeah.
So I buy it with cash because I bought it for so much less. And people are always like, oh, you drive a Volvo. Do you know I paid the same as I would for a Toyota?
Yes.
Except it's a luxury car because... Yeah. And then people, and we get into these huge debates on social media, and I know that the people are arguing with me are all car salespeople. So, but one of the things is people say, yes, but what about the maintenance plan? Well, let me tell you something about maintenance plans. You pay for them up front.
Mm.
So they are built into the cost of the new car. So when you buy your secondhand car, you can buy a maintenance plan. You just buy one.
Yes.
Okay. Or you can actually not buy a maintenance plan and go and get your car serviced outside of the dealership. Do you know that it costs me 1/3 to have my car serviced now that I'm not using a dealership?
Yeah.
I use an affiliate. I use somebody who is accredited, but they're not the dealership. It's cost me 1/3.
I know exactly that, Maya. I remember my car ownership journey also. The first one was a Chevy 2007, fully paid off. I had saved up a little bit and my parents did help me out. And I drove that baby until the wheels almost fell off. I must confess.
I know. I was going to ask you your car story because we went through this with you together.
I'm going to confess. No, I'm confessing on another thing. You know, like when we say money is very emotional and personal. I remember when I started thinking, maybe I need to get a new car. Because, you know, I was feeling a little bit ashamed now, arriving with that type of a car now, to like speaking gigs, to that sort of thing. Because I felt like, wow, are they really going to think that I'm smart if I'm driving this little tiny thing? But it gave me so much confidence that, you know what, I am living my own truth and I'm living the things that I'm preaching to people.
But cars are a very emotional thing.
Yeah.
So people feel it's projecting. It's telling other people how to perceive them.
No, 100%. That's exactly what was happening
in
that instance.
And we do it. We all do it. We dress. We why do I do my hair? Why do I spend money on my looking nice?
My nails.
Because you want to project an image, right?
Yes.
And a car is part of that image.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very important.
And Maya, I'll tell you the difference. So I used to drive that little Chevy 2011 Avio. And you know when you get to the parking lot, the car guards, they don't even greet you. It's like, oh, okay, hi. It's just because obviously they're friendly. But once you get into, my husband is the one who was driving like a nice car at that time. And it'll be like, oh, madam, you know, but you can see just even the perception to your point, what you're saying. Then when I finally sold that car, sold it for cash, then COVID happened because I was in the market to buy a car. Then I started saving all of this money. When I finally said, okay, maybe I need to get a new car, Maya, I went to the dealership. I said, there is no way I'm parting with so much money.
And it kills me. No.
Then I did exactly what you say you do. I went, bought a nice luxury car, enough for my family, but bought it secondhand, got a mechanic who's approved to go see if everything is fine. We did that and I paid cash for it. And I don't have a car installment.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I think that's the secret. Yes, I do. I like driving a nice car.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's comfortable. I'm happy in it, but I don't have to buy it new. I do have to just tell you before we end off this podcast, I did have to go. I was invited to some event or whatever. It was held by Volvo and they had the new electric top range Volvo, 1.2 million rand.
Whoa.
It's beautiful. But for 1.2 million rand, that's an apartment. I mean, and you're going to drive something that's just going to depreciate as you
drive
it. 7 years
later, it's not.
You could invest that in a property.
Yes.
And get rental from it. Like, I don't get it. It's beautiful. But I would have to have enough money that was pretty much nothing to me.
Yes.
So I think there is this market for it. You know, I don't know how many people are in that market. But anyway, I think we're probably going to never be sponsored by Volvo ever again. Or ever in the future.
No, they are going to sponsor us. We're talking about responsibility here. Yeah. So I think.
Well, I think it's given us, you know, a nice little wrap up of how to kind of prepare for those big ticket items,
yes,
your house and your car. But again, we really want to hear from you and engage with you. And I'm going to remind you that there are all these resources on the link in the description that you can fill in. There's the money questionnaire that we discussed a few episodes ago. There's that budgeting one that we discussed,
yes,
that you can use. So I think in preparation for our next podcast, you may want to start downloading some around your credit agreements.
Yep.
So go have a look at that. But please share your insights with us and drop us a voice note via WhatsApp to 062-174-0145.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Maya. We are looking forward to the next podcast on
credit.
Credit. There you go.